Welcome to the Pete Primo Show. It is episode 166, and our guest, Tim McDonald, will be unleashed today. Let's pay the bills first, and then we'll get to Tim. If you haven't bought my book, Sell a Million, what are you waiting for? 101 tips for furniture and mattress stores to sell another $1 million or more this year. And I'd like to say thank you to my friends at the Mattress Industry Network Group for sponsoring the Pete Primo Show. I appreciate you, Steve and Greg. If you are in the mattress industry, we want you in this group. It's a group that's run by store owners for the benefit of the entire industry. If you want to learn how to build, market, sell, and succeed in the mattress industry, hit that QR code right now, and I will see you on the inside. Right there, scan that. And my producer is, even though he doesn't feel well today, he is just on fire. Tim, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, Pete. Thanks for having me, man. I'm super stoked about this.
So I have so many questions. So
For
those of you who don't know, Tim is a store manager, at Home Furniture and Mattress Superstore. And this guy is a relentless student of the game. My gut feeling is, based on what he posts and what he answers, he's doing 99% of everything the right way, but he's always looking for an edge. And so, Tim, I don't know anything about you, dude. So walk me through. I know you're a 20-year vet. Like, how did you get in the business?
I got into the business a long time ago in Fresno, California. I heard about this guy. His name was DJ Patton, David Patton. This guy was just, I would hear from certain people that this guy was just a stud. And I was like, what does he do? And they were like, he sells furniture. And I'm like, no way. So I went and I applied at More Furniture for Less in Fresno, California. Not knowing anything in the game, nothing. And, the hiring manager was like, you know what? You would be a great fit for our store. You would be perfect, but you got to go get some more experience. And like, that was a gut shot back then to me. Right. And so I went and I worked at a couple of smaller stores, to get some experience. And 6 months goes by, I go back, and I say, you know, where's Scott at? You know, I've got some experience, and they hired me there. And, you know, that was one of the coolest jobs that I ever had. I mean, we were pumping numbers like 1.5, 1.2 million a month, you know, had 22 salespeople and we were just rocking and rolling. And I was there for quite a while, you know, $1 million clubs, you know, all the good stuff, you know, going, they sent me on to, the Tempur-Pedic factory to be a Tempur-Pedic ambassador and sales trainer for Tempur-Pedic. And nothing excited me more other than when I was selling mattresses there. You know, I loved selling mattresses. It was just fun, you know, and, yeah, see, I would make that face right there, selling mattresses. Oh gosh, especially moving those big old heavy ones around. There it is. But you know, I was young. I was young back there and I was dumb and I drank a lot and I partied a lot. And I love my faces sometimes, man. I ended that part of my career in a real bad position. You know, I got real addicted to drugs and alcohol and ended up losing that job because, I mean, you can't really show up to work if you're, you know, high. And if you're putting, you know, if you're putting everything behind the drugs and alcohol, you know, you cannot, be a productive member of society. And that led me into a couple of years of homelessness down there in Fresno, California. And, I got on a Greyhound bus and came up here to Albany, Oregon. And I started working some temp jobs. And then a lady that I know that is one of my salespeople now, she's like, oh, you've been in furniture. Why don't you come to work for us? You know? And I came in with that arrogance, right? I came in with pictures of my $1 million club plaques and, you know, Costa Rica and Hawaii plaques and all of this, right? And, one thing about our owner is words mean absolutely nothing. Show me, show me, right? He goes, but I'll hire you. You can start tomorrow, but you're going to be sweeping floors and doing deliveries and unloading trucks. And that was my first shot of humility, right, in the furniture industry. It was like, I'm too good for this, but you know what? I'll do it. You know, and I did that for about 3 to 4 years. And then finally one day he's like, you know what? Come out here and sell for me. You know, and I came out and started selling, taking me back to my basics and, you know, producing numbers. Of course, you know, that's what sales is producing numbers. And about 6 to 8 months into it, he's like, hey, why don't you be a co-manager with another guy? And, so I started co-managing and, you know, obviously producing, showing. And now I'm our general manager here. Never thought in a million years that, I would be back in the furniture industry in a super small town. I call our town Smallbony, Oregon. Because I mean, it's not like Fresno, you know, Fresno had 650,000 people in it. And numbers were easy. There I am going, jumping on beds. But I never thought, right? So like I set a goal my first year to just write a million, you know, just write a million. And that first year I did 1.2. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to do 1.3 next year. And I did 1.4. And then I said, you know what? I'm going to do just a little bit more the next year because I didn't think that it was possible. And then I did 1.45, you know, And a lot of it is in this small town. It's not really, you know, like I used to say back in Fresno, right? Stack them high and sell them low, you know, sell a million tickets at $100 and you'll get $1 million. But here is really slowing down the process, really listening, really engaging, and loving the one that you're with. You know, and it produces. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of my story in the furniture industry. I'm one of those weird guys who absolutely love this industry. What was one of those hats that I forgot who it had was a mattress weirdo. You know, I'm one of those mattress and furniture weirdos to where I just absolutely love this industry and have so much passion for this industry. And it just goes to show, you know.
Well, I think we share that, my friend. I have a lot of questions for you.
Let's roll.
So a lot of people, when they become addicted to alcohol and or drugs, they never get back up.
Yeah.
So I want to dive into that just a little bit.
Yeah.
What helped you? Hold that question. Let me see what guy. So here's a rule in our show.
I love it.
Whoever has a question takes a priority, even over my questions. Guy Danes, much respect. Guy Danes is from South Africa, and he's a regular listener to the show. You've heard me shout him out before. Much mm-hmm. respect there, Tim. I was in the same position. This must be Kyle Danes. I was in the same position a few years ago with drug abuse. Keep it up. The power of the mind, the power of positive self-talk, believing in yourself. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I knew that was Kyle Danes. He is a great young man who has a very similar story. So, Tim, here's my question in a nutshell. Yeah. What in your mind allowed you to get up when other people have stayed down? You were homeless. What allowed you to get back up onto your feet? Was it family? Was it friends? Was it, what was it?
So it was definitely family, you know, but it was a hard thing at that time, right? Because I was such a menace. I was so chaotic, that my family literally had to take steps back and not allow me in their life. You know, and I remember just waking up, the day before I left, I got on a Greyhound bus. And the day before that, right, I woke up in 105 degree heat in an abandoned house with sawdust and nails and screws stuck to my body, you know, And at that moment, I was like, this is actually my life. Like, I am okay living like this. And then I wasn't, you know, and I called my sister and my mom had came up to, Albany about a year before I came up here. And luckily, you know, she has a lot of years sober and everything. And she set the tone for me, said, if you come up here, you have to get a job. You have to work a program. You have to go to church. You know, you have to do this. So I made the change and I came up here. Here's that but, right? Because I didn't put God first. I put other things in front of my relationship with God, which about a year into it, right? I relapsed. Then I switched. I put my God absolutely first, no matter what, seeking vertical instead of horizontal things. And when I put my God first in front of absolutely everything, job, everything, no matter what it was, that's when everything changed for me, 100%.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. It's incredibly huge. And we do not know who's watching now or who will watch this in the future, and they will benefit from you sharing those details. So your mom laid down some rules. You abided by them, but the most important thing you did was you put God first, and then everything started falling into place.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a couple of favorite quotes from books and things like that, but I mean, definitely hands down, my motto for my life, for everything, even when I come to work, right, is seek ye first kingdom of God and his righteousness, and everything else will be added to you, right? Business, prosperity, marriage, children, you know, everything, as long as this is okay for me, everything out here is going to be fine, you know, and hasn't let me down yet.
100%. So I want to dive into this next piece, and that is, you considered yourself a salesperson. You had the awards. You were more than a salesperson. You were an award-winning salesperson. Then this next job you have, he's not letting you on the floor. So tell me what enabled you to be able to essentially swallow your pride and do the other jobs until you got your opportunity.
I would absolutely love to say that I had an overwhelming experience with humility and I just had to do this, right? But my self-esteem was so low at that time. My self-worth was, you know, bottom shelf, bottom level, that I thought that is all that I deserved, you know? Of course, over time that changed to humility. And then that changed into, okay, I have my eye on the prize. I know what I'm going to do, right? One of the 7 habits of highly effective people is to begin with the end in mind. So I knew that if I did this right, if I produced from floor sweeper to, you know, truck lead to management in the warehouse, you know, at some point in time, I will move my way up to the floor. And I had that opportunity, when he opened up another store, but that was right in the middle of my relapse, you know, and I had to literally turn that position down. Because of the respect that I had for our store owner, because I know me and in my addiction, I'm not a good employee, you know? So I had to turn that down, stay in the warehouse for another probably year and a half to 2 years, until I could really, focus on my relationship with God, which then, you know, molded me into a leadership and management kind of potential in the sales floor.
So when did the relapse happen? Was it like a year into it, 6 months into it?
I would say it was about a year into it. Yeah. You know, still holding on to the stupid thinking of I could save other people, you know, There's a saying, you know, if you walk into a barbershop long enough, you're probably going to get a haircut at some point, you know, and I did that. So what I learned was, you know, stay around successful people doing successful things and you're going to be the next successful person. And that's when it kind of shifted for me.
Any books that you were reading at the time?
Of course I read some NA literature, which is Narcotics Anonymous literature, you know, that taught me how to live. And then I did a couple of intensive Bible studies with the pastors at my church that taught me that it's okay to show feelings, it's okay to be hurt, it's okay to be sad, it's okay to feel no matter how you're feeling, as long as you're applying spiritual principles to those feelings and not staying stuck in them. Because like I say, my self-worth and self-esteem was just so stuck in the muck, you know, that, what did I know how to do? I knew how, when I was afraid or when I was feeling angry or anything like that, right? I knew how to lash out in anger and yell and, you know, flex and to be, you know, vicious, but I didn't know how to feel and I didn't know how to talk to people and have intimate conversations about who I really am in this moment, which then shifted for me and allowed me to be okay. Because I was always in that mindset, right? As if you really know me, if you knew who I am, if you knew my heart and my head and what I'm thinking and telling myself, you're not going to like me, you're not going to be my friend, and you're sure not going to love me, and you're probably going to leave me.
Mm. That's a tough program to overcome, but you did it. And what I love about your answers is you're very quick to point out to other people that your pastor helped you, the other people at the Bible studies helped you. And it just makes me think about iron sharpens iron, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you get your opportunity. When your owner said those words, it's time for you to go on the floor, or Tim, do you want to go on the floor? Did you hesitate, or did you like, you were ready? You just, this is what I've been waiting for. I'm ready. I'm going.
I said, yeah, let's go. Like, yeah it's time. Good. And so it was crazy how it happened, because it was like, okay, so we're going to do this in about 2 weeks so that you can get the warehouse in order. You know, you can get the warehouse in order and train the guys that you need to train and then slowly move in. And then like he comes back not even an hour later and he's like, hey, you're going to start on the floor on Saturday. And I'm like, I don't even know how to write a ticket. You know, I don't even know how to operate the sales portion of profit. I can do all the management stuff, but I don't know how to input a sale. He goes, well, you better learn. And I learned, you know, the way that I learned how to swim was my dad, you know, took me to Clovis Lakes or Wellwater Adventure, and you have to pass a swimming test because, I mean, I'm short, you know, I'm compact. I'm not a tall guy by any means. So I had to pass a swim test, and he goes, you got to swim from there to there, drops me in and says, sink or swim. You know, I paddled my butt off, but I was able to ride the rides that day.
Awesome. So this is a pattern with you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Tim, thanks for sharing your story, man. You're going to help people change their life. Yeah, 100%. I so agree with that. Listen, I had a bunch of other things in my mind, but you are very authentic and a tough person. You speak from your soul. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Stu, woo-ha! How did I not know today I'm living a lie was going to be on today? Tim is great. Yes, he is. Thank you, Stu. Appreciate you. Thank you for being here. All right. So you start producing like immediately, right? I mean,
yeah,
you're just putting up crazy. I mean, these are crazy numbers. 1.2 million, 1.4 million, 1.45 million. So how long were you a salesperson on the floor before you started to be a co-manager?
I would say probably 90 days to 6 months.
So you got super fast tracked.
Yes. Yeah. One thing about the owner of my store is, when he sees, when he'll see something, he'll see the potential, he'll see something before I even see it, right? And it's apt. You know, he always tell me, why put off till tomorrow what you could do today? You know what I mean? And that's a reality. Like, and that's something that I tell customers all the time. You know, why put off to tomorrow was something that we could do today. Like, literally, today's the second best time. Yesterday was the first, you
right.
know?
Right. 100%. All right. So we got the background stuff out, which I could literally spend hours on this, but I don't want to. I only have an hour, and you have some things to say that are important for store owners to hear. And I want to get into that. So. Yeah. In your estimation, right now, the traffic in most stores is down. Mm-hmm. Some stores that are focusing in on better goods are focusing in on sleep essentials and are doing a good job with all of that, attaching bed bases, selling the complete sleep system. Seem to be weathering this storm better than the other guys. In your estimation, you've been at this for over 20 years. You're having success. What would you tell a store owner who's struggling? How can they make it in 2024, which is turning out to be the tale of two cities, Tim? I mean, yeah. I've got guys that are lighting it up that are going crazy. There's not a lot of them. There's just a few of them. And then I've got a bunch of guys that are kind of, you know, it's not what I want, but I'm gutting it through. And then I've got a few guys that are ready to throw in the towel any second. So those guys that are ready to throw in the towel, what would you tell them to do to improve their chances of making it in 2024?
Be different. Be different. Be different than the person down the street. Give them an experience that they have never had before, you know? And I mean, where there's no risk, there's no reward, right? And what we did, slightly in the midst of COVID, you know, we were unsure of where the business was going to go. And what we saw in the market field was everybody was tightening the reins, you know, tightening, slowing down, pulling back. And so what we did, we went all in. We started ordering extra stuff. We started turning the tides toward, more premier goods, premier, upholstery, premier mattresses. And we went all in and then we shifted, right? So if we go from having 10 people in the store to two salespeople, you're going to have to kind of bounce back and forth. You know, are you doing okay? Is there anything that I can do for you? You know, you're going to have to kind of, you can't get as intimate as you can when there's only 5 people in the store in a day. So what I would say is obviously be different, slow down. And build that relationship, man. No matter, you know, there's time and time again where I talk about absolutely nothing furniture related at all. But what I'm doing in those moments, right, is I'm garnishing empathy with somebody that I'm a human being. And let's just talk. Let's just hang out for a little while. You know, I had a customer a couple of weeks ago come in and say, I don't care what you do, I ain't buying today, right? And I looked right back at them and I say, that's no problem. As long as we can become friends, you know, they ended up buying, you know, I want to say like 14 or 15 grand. And at the end of it, she's like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get this. And I go, no, you're not. You can't lie to yourself. Don't you break the promise that you made to yourself. And she's like, you better get to your desk, right? But that's what makes it different. That's what makes it enjoyable. And that's what makes, I don't like to toot my own horn per se. You know what I mean? But that's what makes me different. Is that I have fun with my people. I relate with my people. I talk about their shoes. I talk about their family. I talk about their cars. I ask them, you know, and people may shun me. That's okay. I ask them about their faith. And it generally comes off like this. I don't know if you guys are faith led people, but I am, you know, and then boom. Oh yeah. Yeah. And then all the conversations start. And then, right, the relationship happens, you know, where there's no relationship and no trust and no empathy and no, a human experience, right? There's no emotional ties to your guests, which they're going to walk out. You know, they're not going to remember you when they come back, but they will remember somebody that talked about their family, their kids, or their faith.
That what you just said is so good, because the next question I had was give us an example, and you gave us an example. That is so good. And so one of the things that you said a few moments ago is super important for every store owner. If you're too vanilla,
yep.
If you are regurgitating crap out of a book,
yep.
You ain't selling. You are not selling, and you deserve to be out of business.
Absolutely.
You got to take a risk. You have to take smart risks. You risk a little, then risk more. Then maybe risk a lot. Risk a little, then a little more, and then a little more. And I got to tell you something, Tim, that's one of my favorite things. If somebody told me that they're not buying, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be a container. Dude, you told me you're not buying. I'm my pen's down. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Can't do it. Pete, pick up your effing pen. Right? So that's the kind of relationship I have with most of my dealers. And I'm like, all right, I'm here to serve you after all. So, but what are we so afraid of, Tim? Why do we walk through this life not being ourselves? What are we afraid of?
So in my experience, right, I didn't like myself. I didn't like myself. I didn't like who I was in here until I started liking myself in here, right? Until I started being a loving servant and having empathy and care for another human being, because I didn't love and I didn't care for myself for so long, right? Now I love people, and now I can build a relationship with those people. But I see like a lot of salespeople today, right? They're so focused on how much can I make? How much can I make? Commission, 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 that they lose sight of the service part of the entire experience. You know, they don't have a process. You know, I have a 7-step process that I follow. I've been following, since I got tested on the 7 steps of the sale at More Furniture for Less in Fresno. You know, I still follow that same process today. And what does it do? It produces, right? It's a simple process. You get off track, you circle back, you know? And I wanted to kind of circle back, because what I was saying, right, is in the process, shutting up, you know, shutting up, letting the customer speak and actively listening, not only with your eyes, but your ears, and shutting your mouth, because you can see what somebody's saying to you when they turn back and then they cross their legs and they lean back, right? That means they're comfortable. That means they're enjoying it. When their arms are crossed and they're leaning forward, you know, it all these little side things, right? Which either tells me shut up and move on, or sit back and relax and keep going that same way, right? And of course, I mean, I'm a commission salespeople. Money's on my mind at all times, right? I mean, I have a mortgage, I have a wife, I have kids. I mean, stuff's expensive. It's 2024, you know? But the end of the day, servicing the customer and giving them the experience that nobody else in the market's going to give them is number one for me.
So I want to dive into this just a little bit more, because you are just on the verge of really giving us something that almost every store owner, almost every salesperson needs to really get their arms around. Creating the space for them to talk, for them to emote. I don't really care what they say. I care how they're saying it. What's the feeling? So here's something that you can't do when you're a selfish prick and all you care about is your commissions. You can't lay you down and just receive the customer. And that sounds like, wow, Pete, that sounds like, you know, something really weird. No.
That's a reality. Like
when you care about that customer and you care about the relationship so much that you say to the customer, I don't care if you buy or not. I just hope we can be friends. I love that. And when you looked at them, they knew it was true. Yeah. And you already know that if you really become friends, the money's going to follow anyway. And that doesn't, but the reality is, you were willing to take a risk there. And so many salespeople are like, they would just be hands off and let the customer walk around and like not even be helped. And I think that's the biggest mistake that we make as salespeople and as store owners who are selling on a floor. We don't risk enough. They're already not buying. So what is it that you think you're risking? And I love this thing about the commissions. I used to tell my salespeople, if you're even thinking about your commissions during the sale, you are not in the present moment. Yep. You are not receiving all the little teeny tiny inputs that the customer's given you. And you are not in any place. If you're in a place of selfishness and greed, you cannot receive what they're giving you and you don't know. I want to jump into this. Most of the time, the reason your customers aren't buying isn't because they don't like you, isn't because your store doesn't have enough selection, isn't because your prices are too high, even though customers love, as a matter of a negotiating tool, say that to you all the time. So you get a healthy dose of that in your life. and I do too. All right. But when we just listen to them and really care about them getting the right thing, all of a sudden you start to pick up every little cue. And sometimes the 800-pound gorilla that's in the room is the last purchase they screwed up on. Mm-hmm. And it may not have been furniture. It might have been a crappy home that they don't like and they got high pressured into it. Might be an automobile that they bought and they got high pressured into it. And they have no confidence in themselves. So what happens? I'm going to tell you right now what Tim's doing, and he's going to respond so that I'm not putting words in his mouth because that ain't sanitary. So when Tim finds a customer that's not confident, but he has absolute confidence, they can borrow his because they're friends now, because they're no longer salesperson on this side, customer on this side. We've crossed that barrier. We're on the same side of the table. And Tim, I already know the answer to this. Would you ever put your financial needs ahead of the customer's true wants and needs? No. Ever? You'd rather lose the sale, right?
Absolutely.
Me too. Absolutely. Me too. And guess what happens when they feel that? That's a feeling that they get from you. Guess what happens? They want to buy from you. And guess what happens? Absolutely, Stu, you're 100% right. Two ears, one mouth. They should be talking more if the proper questions are addressed. 100%. Keep them talking. And Columbo, right? Could you explain that?
Yeah.
Asking those questions, creating that space and that silence. And, you know, when your heart's in the right place, all the gestures and all the things that you learn in these sales trainings, you do those naturally. You do them. They just come out of you. And when they just come out of you because your heart is in the right place, that's where the magic happens.
Absolutely. So
I've been doing all the talking. By the way, my friend, Mark Hunter, who is a high level sales training guy, he calls that commission breath when you're focused on what you, and you talk differently and you make eye contact differently and you become slimier when you're thinking about what your commissions are. So you I've been doing all the talking, and I can tell you're just dying to jump in here.
Yeah, I kind of want to circle back to where you were talking about, right? That that elephant in the room where people have had the bad experiences, right?
Yeah.
And I generally ask them, and I learned this from my wife, you know what I mean? Believe it or not. How did that make you feel when that happened?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then what does that do? It draws out the emotional experience that they had. And I simply respond with, you know, not, I'm going to fix that. I'm going to do better. I just say, you know what? I'm sorry that happened to you. I'll definitely make sure, that nothing like that is going to happen to you when you do business with our company, right? Oh my gosh. Where did you guys go?
Okay. I'm here.
Okay.
Whew. You didn't go anywhere, brother.
Oh, buddy.
It's all good.
And then another thing too, like to circle back with what Stu said, and I know that he's probably seen and heard this from Ryan Stuman, right? From Apex. He says in sales, right? The person who speaks the most earns the least, right? So if the salesperson is talking a lot more than the customer, guess what, buddy? You just lost that sale 100% of the time because you're over talking them. You're not listening. You know, you're, if you are listening, you're listening to respond and not to empathize and not to take it in. And, you know, you're not asking if I'm hearing you correctly, you're saying this, right? Just nodding your head. They're nodding their head. You're now nodding both of your heads. You're now connected. You guys are now making eye contact. And now the sales process has begun.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so good. How did that make you feel? And the most important thing is how you look at them in the eyes after they say that. The words almost don't even matter as long as it's not something utterly stupid. But if you truly care and your heart is parked in the right place in a servant to this customer and you want them to get the right thing, those words will come out the right way. And understanding this is something we don't talk about enough in sales. Understanding that mistake that they made in their past haunts them. Mm-hmm. And it could be 10 purchases ago, but it still comes up right before. So sometimes we get these scenario questions in the Mattress Industry Network group. And it's one of the beautiful things about the Mattress Industry Network group is that you could ask a question and you got a bunch of people, some more qualified than others, but some really smart guys and gals in there that will chip in. And, but what I don't see a lot of is a lot of addressing this confidence problem that some customers have. And like I said before, they will buy into your confidence as long as you guys are on the same side of the table. You bridge that gap. You have gone from being a salesperson to a trusted advisor. When you make that leap, and that leap is done bit by bit by bit. So I want to ask you this. It's easy to say be different. It's easy to say slow down, build a relationship. Give us some more examples of you building a relationship with a customer. Like, how do you do it? Because I know somebody's watching this going, well, how do you build a relationship?
Yeah. So right at the front door, you know, you smile with your eyes. You walk up, not with your chest pumped up, but you walk up with excitement, right? If I'm walking into a store and somebody's just hunched over and walking and dragging their feet, right? The first thing that I'm thinking in my head is, oh gosh, not this guy, right? So walking up, shaking their hand, getting their name, repeating their name back to them, and then just having a conversation with them, you know, laughing, joking. It's literally not that hard. If you take away, right? If you take away that right now I am clocked into this company, I have to sell this customer walking in, and you can envision yourself in a Costco, let's say, and you bumped into somebody, right? You see them from church, you have a conversation with them, you're talking to them, right? It's just being a human being at that point in time. And then the sales process begins after, you know, the qualification process, obviously. But the relationship part is just asking questions, shutting up and listening. And, you know, if you don't understand something, create some humility. Say, you know what? I'm not sure if I actually understand that. Can we unpack that a little bit more? Mm-hmm. It makes them know that you're listening to them. You care, and you care about what they're saying. You know, when my wife's talking to me and when I'm talking to my wife, right? If we don't understand something, we say, hold on, what do you mean by that? We're in a marriage. We're in a relationship. You know, it has to start somewhere. But then I also kind of want to circle back, right? To a saying that I absolutely love. We just had a Tempur-Pedic top performers dinner and ceremony and everything a couple of weeks ago. And one of the quotes that was in our training was that customers are drawn to clarity and they resist confusion, right? So if what I'm saying, because I'm an expert in my field, right? I study my field. I know my field. I know my product. So if I'm precise with my words and I mean what I'm saying and I know what I'm talking about, they're going to be drawn to me. The energy is going to flow to that clarity. But if I'm fumbling and stumbling and mumbling, right, the confusion sets in. Wait a minute. I don't think I know what he's saying. You know what? Let's go down the street and see what this guy knows what they're talking about. Because obviously there's no clarity in this guy's voice and all I got was confusion from it.
Yeah, they can be confused all by themselves. They don't need a salesperson to help get them more confused. But often when we shop our competition, that's what we find out is actually happening. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad state of affairs that people buy things online because they don't want to deal with salespeople who have in the past not performed well and have not created clarity. So thank you for sharing that. So I've been dying to ask you this question.
Yeah, buddy. I wish I was at my desk right now because I have mine. Five groups of knowledge. You know, you better know them or else you're dying. You better know those five groups. You better know your inventory, your pricing, your customers. You know, you better know what your competition's doing. If you don't know what your competition's doing, you're failing yourself and your customers because they don't have the, you know, it irks my stomach, right? When I see the pride of, I don't care what my competition's doing. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, right? And it's, you know what? If Muhammad Ali didn't study his opponents, he wouldn't have been the greatest boxer of all time. If Conor McGregor doesn't study his opponents, he cannot beat them. He doesn't know when the overhand right is coming, right? Yeah. And so not that I'm worried about competition because they don't have my sales staff. They don't have what we create here. I have an amazing sales staff. Let me tell you that, right? We have some growing pains at times, but I have a great sales staff. But right, I go and I shop competitors just so when a customer comes in and says, I saw this at so and so, and I can say, oh yeah, right. You know, you walk into the door, you go right, you go around where that white bedroom sat and it's right there. Yeah, the store looks absolutely amazing, doesn't it? Shaking my head once again. You know, letting them know, okay, don't lie to me because I've been there too. It creates that integrity that they didn't have with you, right? It creates that bond of oh yeah, he has seen it. He knows that, you know, it's the same price that I was just going to try to lie to him and say that they have it for $500 less. Right. And, so yeah, I mean, I encourage you guys to do that. It was mandatory for where I came from. It was mandatory. 100%. You better.
Yeah. I want to unpack that a little bit. It's great to break down the barriers to become friends, but people want to buy from somebody who knows his or her business.
Yeah.
What Tim just demonstrated was competence. I'm competent. I shot my competition. I care. I know I'm an expert without beating himself on the chest, but that's brilliant because I used to do the same thing when I was in retail, and I still do the same exact thing in wholesale. I mean, I'll even have some of my competitors' model numbers memorized along with the price and along with the features and benefits that they don't have that I do have. And when you say that to a potential customer and you know more than they do about it, all of a sudden, they're like, this dude knows what he's talking about. I better just play this straight and figure out a different way I love this book. This is another one. This thing is a playbook for all retail salespeople. When I worked at Sutherland, Drew Reichart recommended this to me. How to sell at margins higher than your competitors. It's by Larry Steinmetz and William Brooks. It's a great book. And what it does is it lets retail salespeople know the game that's being played. So here's part of the game that's being played every day. Store owners, really listen to this because it's super important. Your customer's job is not to tell you the absolute truth. As a matter of fact, your customer is going to lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
Make your peace with that. They're going to lie to you. Their job in their minds is they want to do business with a quality company, but they want the best price. So what are they going to do? They're going to shop everywhere. They're going to get the best price. And then they're going to go back to the store that they want to buy at. And they're going to say something like this. Hey, Tim, I've been shopping around, I did find this item for less. Now, what they're not saying is the other guy doesn't have it in stock and I'd have to wait 6 to 8 weeks. What they're not saying is that's a dirty window store and I would never want to buy anything there. I don't even want to be seen in that store. And I sure as heck don't want that truck showing up in my neighborhood. They're not saying any of that. They're just saying the price. And Tim, the only reason I came back is because out of all the salespeople, I really liked you the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they say that so that they can put together their all-star deal. And yeah, that's what they're doing. And us understanding the game that's being played and shopping your competition, that allows you to know whether you should match the price, take the deal right this minute, or maybe you can hold out for a little more margin. Maybe you give a discount, but it's not quite as much of a discount, but I can see you want to jump all over this. So you go.
Yeah. Right. I love that. And that's where knowing your inventory, knowing your product and knowing theirs is so imperative. Right. And knowing what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. Like I know 100% that, there's certain stores that will not sell their floor models no matter what. They're nailed down. That's it. Point blank period. Right. And then I know also the vendor's inventory log. You know, I go in to see their inventory log and I know that, okay, well, it's going to be 8 to 10 weeks to get it. And guess what? You know, I have it here. I have my guys, you know, you're going to get a white glove delivery service. We're going to haul your old furniture out. You know, we're going to show up on time. We don't give you a 3-hour time window. We actually set appointments. And when you get an appointment, we value your time and ours. So we keep that appointment, you know, and it's building the value. And when the value exceeds the dollar amount that they're willing to pay, you win every single time, right? Knowing that Mikey Whited in the back, who's been with us for 23 years, is going to service and fix your do any repairs for you, you know, 5, 6, 7 years down the road, knowing that it's not going to be a third party service, you know, gives a little bit more value, gives a little bit more confidence. And if it's, you know, you can identify and isolate if it is price or not. So, right. So if you wanted something right now and I could take $100 off of it, but you had to pick it up yourselves and I wouldn't be able to haul away your old stuff, would you still make the purchase today? Probably not. So why don't we just go ahead and do this now, right? Let my guys break their back. Let my guys, you know, value your time, and let's just go out and seal the deal now. And that way, you know, you don't have to wait the 6 to 8 weeks. You don't have to wait, you know, you don't have to pick up trash that they left behind. You know, you don't have to run to the dump with your old furniture and pay $49.99 dump minimum. You know, I'll do it for $25. You know, it's just building value. So many salespeople, right? They get like Gumby and flimsy at the very first objection, right? Which it may not even be a true objection. It could be a complete smokescreen, right? You know, and generally 9 times out of 10, price is not the objection. It's they just want to see you fold. They just want to see you fumble. They just want to see if you are speaking truth when you tell them that this sofa is $29.99, however, that does not include our 5-year protection, which I highly recommend. It's a great value and it doesn't cost that much. You know what I mean?
Yep.
They want to know, well, you know, and I've seen that time and time again, right? Sofa's $2,000. Somebody asks, what's the price? Well, let me go run to my computer, see what I could do for you. You know, or I've asked customers that, you know, so is this your best price that you can do? Well, let me go and talk to my manager. Let me see what better I can do. I didn't even care about the price. I just asked a question, you know?
Oh, wow. So listen, I'm going to read this comment in a minute, 1 minute. I want you guys to rewatch this. Hit that link. It lives on YouTube. And I want you to watch Tim's body language. When he's actually playing back what he's saying to the customer, he's not coming forward. He's kind of retreating. He's doing that because he's a pro. He's making the customer come towards him. There are times where you need to physically retreat. You need to not be stepping towards them. When you're saying something that could be construed as strong, you need to actually be retreating. Yep. So that they can receive it, so that they come forward a little bit. So, and he's watching their body language. If they're coming forward, he lowered his voice and he retreated. He's making the customer come. This is called sales aikido, and he's obviously the master of it. And rewatch that segment with those, with that. And oh my gosh, we're running out of time. I got like,
we could do this all day.
We could do this all day, brother. We actually could. So let's pull that comment up, because Texas Mattress Barn, I never discount the price of the mattress. I try to add value through discounted pillows, bedding, mattress protectors, frames, etc. Am I doing it wrong? This is a question to you, Tim.
So I don't feel like there's a doing it wrong or doing it right. You know, do you feel that you're providing the best value and the best service to your customer? And is it a win-win situation for you and at your store? If it's a win-win situation for the both of you, keep it trucking, you know, keep it going. But what a lot of people do, right? They don't build that value. You know, like I like how you say, I try to add value, right? So there's adding value and then there's decreasing the price. When you're decreasing the price, you're also decreasing the value, because what you just sold them on, when you sold them on $19.99, well, now you're decreasing the value to what you should have started selling them at $15.99. So where's your integrity? You know, where's the integrity in that, right? Oh, wait, I've been selling you at $19.99, but you just threw a little, you know, you just threw a right jab at me. So now what I was selling you at $19.99 is now $17.99. I should have been there, right? Is that energy flowing, or is it pulling in, or is it pushing away at that point in time?
Stu, what do you got here? I had to take an entire day off of work just to get a new bed. Not at home. We will come when you get off.
That's it.
That's it. Well, thank you for the question, Texas Mattress Barn. Appreciate you. And Tim, we have like run out of time. I cannot believe this. And I want to keep going. This has been unbelievably great. Such a pleasure to get to know you, to understand your story. And I'm going to tell you something. There will be some people that watch this and it's going to change their lives. And there's going to be some store owners that will get some direction and it's going to change their lives. If somebody wants to continue the conversation, Tim, how do they get a hold of you?
Just give me a call, you know, 541-730-2071. You can always find, you know, hit that message button on the Facebook Industry Network. You know, I'm pretty active in that. Just give me a call, shoot me a message. I love what I do and I love helping people. Absolutely. I have a couple of guys that hit me up almost weekly in here, you know, just to ask, you know, for advice and things like that. It's all about winning. You know what I mean? It's all about winning. Period. When us as an industry can come together and boost what the industry is meant for and supposed to be, we're all going to win.
Did you see Eric's comment?
Yeah, that guy right there, Eric Rodriguez, is an absolute Tempur-Pedic stud in Fresno, California.
Cheers, my brother. Great job. Thank you, Eric, for making a comment and supporting Tim. And Tim, you just helped a bunch of people not only sell a million, but you also might have saved a life today. So thank you very much for being vulnerable, for sharing your wisdom with us, for sharing your story with us. Guys, go out there and sell a million, and we'll see you very soon, next week, as a matter of fact. Tim, thank you.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you for having me on, man. It was fun.
You bet. Take care, buddy.
All right, bye-bye.